8:15 now, good morning. Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday and heard about the fatal flaws analysis from Park City Transportation Director Alfred Knotts for a new Eastside Park and Ride. On the phone with an update on that topic and more, I have Summit County Council Member Doug Clyde. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Leslie.
So there were three lots presented for a new park and ride lot there at Quinn's Junction. Doug, do you favor one of the three sites that Park City's looked at or the position put out by your colleague Glenn Wright for other outlying areas?
Well, I think there are sort of two separate issues. One is, what do we do in the near term? What do we do immediately? And that is analogous to what we did with the Ecker Hill Park and Ride. We had a problem. We had some solutions. They were all less than ideal, but we knew we needed to do something. So we put in the Ecker Hill Park and Ride, and it was successful in some of the events. And I think that essentially is the attitude or the situation that Park City finds themselves in now, where they need to do something. They can't wait. Even if they were to throw money at it, they can't wait 10 years to do something.
So you think the Ecker Hill lot is a success?
At times, it was put in a hurry. It was not well advertised, but it did during some peak events fill up or get close to full.
Yeah, but I think we're looking for something more than just peak events, aren't we?
Of course we are, Leslie. It's just a question of when do you get there? You know, if you wait for UDOT and say, well, we're planning a major modification on this interchange in 20 years, that's not exactly addressing the problem.
Right.
So, you know, traffic issues are ongoing. They involve multifaceted solutions, and temporary things like park and rides that may be in less than ideal locations are certainly things that we have to look at.
Yeah, so
you know, we're talking about a $2 million project versus a $30, $40, $50 million project.
Right. So do you agree with Glenn Wright that you won't support any funding from the county unless the city looks at more options? Or do you say that this, you know what, we've got to do something now, so go forward?
Well, first of all, they're not asking for any funding from the county. They're just informing us about what they're doing in attempting to solve their problem. They're going to be looking for federal funds federal and state funds to solve this. So they didn't come with their handout. So that's a misconception.
Okay. Isn't it that the county's collecting the fourth and fifth quarter taxes? Isn't that something,
right,
though, that would pay for something like this?
I don't know the details of the bond to be sure, but all of our monies that are collected in those taxes are going directly to actual transportation in the form of buses and vehicles.
All right, the county council approving the entry gate at Trails at Jeremy Ranch. The council came to this decision after a long time in closed session, in fact, running over the allotted closed door time by about an hour. Why did you cast your vote for the gate when there are the gaps and ambiguities in the record going back to the 1990s?
Yeah, it was. It's a very complex decision. You know, there's 700 pages of information that it has to be looked at. But at the end of the day, when we were discussing it, we came across two items that showed actually for the first time in our analysis that the project was appeared to be properly approved. Now, you have to remember, we're dealing with 20-year-old records here. Some of the records were very complete. Some of them were incredibly sparse. And the ones we were struggling with were the incredibly sparse ones. And again, as we were reviewing the data, we found some information that indicated pretty clearly that the county commission, as it was then referred to, did approve the planning commission's recommendations as well as their conditions of approval and findings of fact. So upon seeing that information, we, at least some of us, changed our position and decided that, in fact, they probably had received a full approval for the gate.
All right. The county council yesterday quickly reaffirming the 3-2 vote in favor of the special exception for the climbing wall to allow it to a height of 48 feet. The vote, a bit unusual to get the three council members who voted for it in favor. You had to get Kim Carson on the phone. Glenn Wright voted against it. You abstained. How come?
Well, I abstained simply because I did vote against the special exception. The call on the special exception was actually a very close vote. I don't think that, in spite of the fact that we split 3-2, I don't think there was a lot of data between us that could have made it a 5-0 vote either way. But what they were voting on was the resolution that says this is why we're granting a special exception. And I was, I was outvoted on the special exception, and therefore I just thought it was appropriate to abstain on approving the issues as to why we granted the special exception.
Okay, so there's no conflict or anything. That's usually when we see an abstention.
I felt fine about the way that the item was written up, but again, I didn't approve of the actual vote. So,
okay, I guess I don't understand why not just then vote no. I guess I'm looking for the subtlety there.
The process was appropriately followed. I thought that the council voted in favor of it. And so I didn't see any reason to vote no. I thought as a matter of process, it was correct.
Got it. You heard from Council Member Kim Carson with regard to the Utah Association of Counties update. A county official wading into partisan politics by asking some members to support an op-ed in favor of President Trump, given the recent news about an impeachment inquiry being launched against him in the House of Representatives. And then apparently in this this meeting, singling her out. What was your reaction when you heard this?
Well, I think Kim brought it forward for good reason, and that sort of behavior is simply unacceptable. We've been a long and very significant contributor to UAC, and Kim especially has spent an enormous amount of her time advancing the issues of the county with UAC, and I think is considered to be a prominent member, and it was just simply completely inappropriate for someone to make what are to some degree derogatory comments about her based on politics.
So, does the county council contact UAC officials about this, or do you have any plans to do so, or do you just let it be?
Well, I think both Glenn and Kim are going to be discussing this with other UAC officials, and then we'll decide at that point, I think, whether we need to take more action.
Yeah. Is there any kind of public repercussions for this, or membership denied? Or is it really just handled amongst individuals?
I think it can be handled amongst individuals. I doubt that anybody's going to come after us per se if we object to what is otherwise clearly, or maybe not clearly, but at least purportedly, a slanderous comment. Then we see a lot of that going on in federal politics right now. Unfortunately, it's gotten out of hand. We would like it if at local level that did not creep into our vocabulary.
Yeah, I haven't heard the audio tape. I mean, can you repeat what was said?
No, I didn't hear. We didn't have a tape of the actual meeting. Hmm. I don't know that there is one for that matter.
Yeah, but in terms of what Kim told you.
Oh, and be aware that Kim was talking to us over a phone, and so I did not hear word for word precisely what she was saying, or precisely what the comment was that was passed. But it was clearly partisan and appeared to be derogatory.
All right. And I guess when we talk about consequences, should there be some for people that maybe speak out like that?
Consequences for people who speak inappropriately. You know, I doubt that we're going to pry anybody off of UAC, even if it was understood. I think that, you know, hopefully they'll just get an appropriate call from someone in management who says, "Hey, we, you know, this isn't the way we act."
All right. During a public comment, an interesting issue was brought up by four residents along Chalk Creek Road. They said that there is some tall grass growing along the road, which presents a safety hazard and should be mowed by the county. They said that the grass is preventing motorists from seeing deer crossing the road or even spotting cyclists or even seeing kids on the road. You made an interesting remark saying that the type of grasses in these areas have changed significantly in recent years. Can you explain what you meant there?
Yeah, there's, you know, for anybody who's watching the environment, and I do a lot of work that's environmentally related as well as wetland work and just general revegetation and erosion control and that sort of stuff. So if you're tuned in to watching, you know, our local plant ecology, especially this year, we have seen some pretty dramatic changes. One of the things that we have seen in general, though, is a certain type of grass is beginning to take over the shoulders of our road. And for the geeks out there, that's Great Basin barley. And it's quite robust, and it grows very tall. It grows 5 to 6 feet tall. It possibly is showing up in some of our seed mixes. It's a great plant. I believe it's native, unlike a lot of the plants that we use for revegetation. But adjacent to the road, it presents both a sightline problem and a fire hazard problem. And so I think that this situation is being exacerbated by a change in vegetation to a taller, denser type of grass, and the fact that that grass was fueled by a very vigorous growing season this year.
Yeah. So is it the county's responsibility then to mow the grasses along a county road?
The county has, you know, the responsibility to take care of the road, and how much effort we put into any road, of course, is a function of the amount of traffic and transportation on that road. In the past, I believe that we have mowed it, but we're checking on that right now. Irrespective going forward, I think that those people have a very valid point and we need to do something.
Okay. Finally, county officials want to repeat their warning that when you get your tax bill, check carefully to see if you are listed as a primary or secondary property, especially if you bought your property recently. Have we seen some problems with that this year?
Yes, anytime there's a transaction, there's always the potential for a confusion about whether it is primary or secondary residence. And certainly if you're moving new into the area and you're deciding to buy a house that used to be a secondary residence and you're moving in as primary resident, that may not even be something that's on your radar. You may not even understand our tax structure. And so what we're trying to do is get the word out that if you believe there has been a change in a property that is, you know, recently transacted and you're a part of that transaction, meaning you're the buyer, you need to get with the county and tell us whether you're primary or secondary. And we would like that information by October 15th.
Okay. Anything else, Doug, you'd like to mention?
Leslie, I think that's about it.
All right.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you for your time. KPCW News Time now, 8:30. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, a new transition program was introduced to Park City High School students this year. In the studio with details, I have Park City School District Special Education Specialist Kara Breckwell, along with transition teacher Holly Huggins. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Kara, let's begin with you. Maybe you can just give us a little bit of the background to the new program, what it is and who it's for.
Sure. So we transition programming is something that has been in Park City High School. Any student who's age 14 and over, we do a lot of planning for what does life look like after Park City High School graduation as far as employment, careers, education. So we had a vision for not just doing that planning, but providing opportunities for students to experience all the instruction and activities and even skill building so that they could prepare for life after high school in the world of work.
Okay, so something like this hasn't been done before.
Well, it has been, and we individualize for all students, and if that's their transition outcomes, then we provide those opportunities. But what we wanted to have was an actual program that we could say the students that are involved in this program, the outcome is that they're going to be fully employed in a job that they love, that they feel confident about, that they have the skills to do, and for a lot of these students, it's going to be employed in our local businesses. And so we wanted to structure all of the instruction, the curriculum, the activities, the opportunities, everything's based on that outcome for the students.
Yeah. So you've developed a curriculum then that specifically is for all students as opposed to kind of an individualized program?
It's for the students that's their transition outcome. So they really want to be fully employed. So we start with our sophomores, and for sophomores, we're looking at what are their strengths, what are their interests. We're looking at what are the skills that they need to be successful in the jobs that they're interested in. We're looking at the hard skills of those jobs. We're looking at the soft skills. What communication needs do they have? How do you interact with people on the job? All of those things that go with being successful at work.
So the curriculum is probably pretty varied then, depending on the student.
It is varied on the students, very individualized. That's what we do. Yeah. But it also has an overall outcome of what do you need to be prepared for being successful in employment.
So students are helping then to create these kind of portfolios for themselves?
Yes, and I can actually have Holly speak a little bit more about what she's done so far as far as her career exploration and opportunities.
So, Holly, let's just back up a little bit before you do that, though. I mean, you went through the Park City School District yourself. You've been with the district for how long then?
Yes, I moved to Park City when I was 2 weeks old, and I never left, so I was K through 12 Park City student. And it's been an honor and a blessing to come back.
Yeah, so you have a position as transition teacher. Are you the only transition teacher, or do you work with a team? Or
There's a great team at the high school that I'm lucky to be a part of. And there's also a transition program at the Learning Academy that has been there for a while. And I'm lucky to get to talk to that teacher as we embark on this journey. So.
All right, so talk a little bit then about these individualized transition portfolios that you help students develop.
Well, I think at first it starts from a place of wanting to be where you want to be. Like, I can go out and I can, like, get you a job somewhere, we can shove you in there, but people don't want to work at places they don't like. So we're kind of going over, what are your, like, overall interests? Like, there's a student who enjoys athletics and, you know, okay, so you like athletics. Maybe you want to work kind of in that field. And just making it really individualized to their skills too, what they like. Like, I have some students who are just wonderful cooks, and I keep telling them to bring me food. and looking at, you know, bakery outcomes or stuff like that for those wonderful students.
Yeah, so say, let's use that as somebody who would want to develop into perhaps a chef. I mean, there's plenty of jobs for them. How is it that you train that there? I mean, right? How do you develop that
skill?
Well,
first thing is we don't stay at the high school. We've been so lucky to have such great community partners like Deer Valley. And we went there. And we had, of course, we had a whole lesson about Deer Valley before we went there, and we learned about all their different jobs and what their website looks like and things like that. And then Deer Valley was awesome enough to say, sure, come on up here. And so I think, if this makes sense, I think that's really the first step in training them is we took them into Deer Valley. Deer Valley, of course, was willing and wonderful, and they took us in their bakery, and we spoke to their chef. And we saw them making food, and we learned about kind of the job skills, that they need.
And then does that probably get some even more excited about figuring out how to do it?
Yes. Yeah. And of course, that's supplemented by the wonderful foods classes and CTE programs that we have at Park City High.
Okay. In terms of how many kids you have in the program, how many are you dealing with?
Currently, I have, I'm so sorry, mm-hmm. currently I have about 12 to 13-ish students that I have the blessing to deal with.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And of the 12 or 13, are any of them graduating this
yes,
year?
Yes, we have a couple of seniors that are going to graduate, and it's exciting.
Yeah, and then is the program, is it an elective, or is it just part of the whole program? I mean, is it? I guess I just is it an elective class form or.
So when we talk about the program, there's 8 full classes at the high school. So each of the students take. So Holly teaches 4 classes. One class in particular works on their independent skills, and then she also teaches a transition class and a career exploration class, and those classes incorporate what she was speaking of, all the curriculum, the instruction, the wonderful community-based activities that she's doing, and they are out and about experiencing. Deer Valley, of course, wonderful partner. She's also partnered with the Lucky Ones, the Kimball Arts Center.
Recycle Center was awesome.
Yep, Recycle yeah. Center. And what's really great, and we're so excited to have Holly, because she really understands this, being a community member in Park City and living here all her life, she is connected. And she understands the community businesses. She knows how to take the students and then help them experience what they need to.
Yeah. So I want you to talk a little bit about, because I guess as when school started, as other kids were kind of acclimating to their classroom routines, you brought them on to the Park City Transit team and had like a scavenger hunt. Tell me about that.
Yes, we went to... I'm so embarrassed because I don't know the full name of this plaza, but it's the one with Wasatch Bagel and Teriyaki and the market. Do you know the name of this place?
Yeah, where Dan's is.
Where Dan's is.
Where the market at Park City.
As all us locals say, where Dan's is. But yes, that area. And we looked at, you know, what are the different businesses over there? Because you could spend a whole day over there going to the doctor, going to the dentist, going to the store, seeing the Olympic Plaza. Going to Wasatch Bagel for a tasty treat. And we had kind of had a scavenger hunt to practice finding those places, and they all did awesome at it.
Yeah. So is this a new position, or did you just work this out within the budget you had, or did you need new money for it?
It's within the budget. It went through the budgeting process. We just reconfigured at the high school to have this focus. So we could make sure that we are meeting this particular group's needs of the employment outcome.
Okay. So as you kind of work with the seniors in particular over the coming school year, I'm guessing you're going to be wanting to work on them with, resumes and cover letters? So is that
another
part of the class?
Yes, definitely. Kind of updating it for today's world, because I feel like the kind of format for those are always changing. So I've used a lot of college career websites because those people are so up to date, and we're kind of looking at that. Sorry about that. And going over that.
Yeah. So you also practice interview skills with them as well?
Yes, that's so important.
Yeah. So I mean, you actually spend time as if you were interviewing them, or
yes, that definitely.
Yeah. You mentioned the chef interest. Anything else that kids are kind of being attracted to in terms of profession?
Oh gosh, jobs? There's like everything, and we're so lucky here in Park City to have all these options for such a small town. We have some students that are really interested in customer service, as it relates to like working as a cashier and handling money and things like that. We have some students who are really interested in maybe working at the resort in the summer, and specifically the Alpine Slide and operating that, and they're really excited about that. And of course, we're still in the process, especially with our younger kids, of figuring out, hey, where are you interested in? Where do you want to work in Park City? And I'm lucky that my background in this community has kind of helped with that process, because I'm able to know where some of these jobs would be.
Now, finally, I mean, what are the biggest obstacles for these kids to have a successful career after high school?
I can speak to that. And you were talking about developing resumes and cover letters. And so the other outcome is, once these students graduate and they are employed, now what Holly needs to help them with is, what are the soft skills to, well, what if I want to advance in my career? How do I do that? How do I advocate for myself? Or what if I want to change jobs? How do I update my resume? How do I go about applying for a new job? So for the seniors, that's the obstacle. We're you can get them on the job and get in the hard skills and the soft skills right now, but how do we get them prepared so they can be independent even when they don't have the support of the programming?
Yeah. Especially in today's world with all this social media, and different like workplace communication options like Slack and things like that, how to best use that to help your career and be professional.
Yeah. You know, and Park City is pushing one of its critical priorities, social equity, and I think that this falls within that. I mean, do you think, are you building the partnerships that will take the time to invest in special needs kids? Young adults?
I definitely feel like it. We've had great community contacts, and I have even more that I'm making every day, like on a Saturday when I go out and go to the store, because people in this community are just so welcoming and supportive and want everyone to be successful.
And I think that's what you bring up an important point, and that's the other thing that we were talking about, that obstacle, but it's an opportunity as well, because that is a big piece of helping them, okay, so now I'm employed, and what are some of the community supports for me, like the social equity grant program that's going on? How can I as an individual get involved in that? So that's also a big piece of what Holly's doing for this population.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention? No?
If anybody in Park City is listening to this and they find themselves thinking, oh my gosh, I'd love to give a tour to this program, or I have an open spot and I could use a reliable, hardworking individual. They can call the high school and the high school can reach me, and I'd love to set something up.
Okay. Holly Huggins, Kara Brickwell, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the One Book, One Community, sponsored by Park City Education Foundation, is happening this month. A number of events planned surrounding the visit of the author of this year's book, The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, William Kamkwamba. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning to you, William.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So tell us a little bit about yourself first and how you came to write this New York Times best-selling book.
So I grew up in Malawi, in a small village in Malawi. I grew up in the farming village. So my parents are farmers. We depend on growing our own food that we eat each and every year. So farming in Malawi has like a number of like challenges. One of the challenges is because it's the land fed agriculture. You depend everything to plant during the rainy season. In 2000 to 2001 growing season, we experienced some drought. As a result, the crops didn't do well, and a lot of people ran out of food a little quickly. And the famine broke out throughout the country, and a lot of people were struggling, including my family at that time. And at that time, I was supposed to study high school. Because of the situation, I couldn't go to school, and I was forced to drop out of school. When I first drove out of school, I started thinking, what can I do in order for me to continue with my study? So I started going to the library, where I read a book about the windmills, and I decided to build the windmill. And from there, I had a chance to be invited to attend the TED conference, which was held in Arusha, Tanzania. And some of my friends helped me to study blogging about my story, and that was connected. One of the blogs was seen by one of the journalists who wrote an article in the Wall Street Journal, and that article was picked up by my agent. She was interested to meet me and to see if I was interested to write a book about my story. So I said, I'm interested. That's how the story came about, to write a book.
Okay. So when do you get to town, to Park City?
I'll get to town on the 7th.
Okay. So there's a number of events, as I mentioned, surrounding your visit. Tonight at the Summit County Library at Kimball Junction, they're hosting what's called the Harness the Wind. It's a family activity happening between 6:30 and 8 p.m. Then on Monday, there's going to be a free film screening at the Jim Santee Auditorium at 7 p.m. Again, the film is The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. Have you seen the film?
Yeah, I've seen the film several times, yeah.
Yeah, and what do you think about it? Did it accurately reflect your book, bring it to life?
Yeah, it did actually reflect my book. For me, the only thing that I have watching the movie is that I have two mixed feelings when I watch it, because I'm reliving the past. Some of the past that was very, very exciting for me, some of the past that was very hard to me, what I had to go through. So for me, that's why I have those two mixed feelings watching the movie. But overall, they did do a great job to get to make the movie, because it's not always easy to take a book which is it can be 300 pages long and turning it to one hour and a half film. You have to make some decisions. So I'm very happy to the way the movie turned out.
Okay. Now, let's see. You get in Monday, and then on Tuesday and Wednesday, you'll be meeting with students at Park City High School and Treasure Mountain Junior High School. What's going to be your message to students?
I think one of the message to students is I'm just going to try share with them that in everything that they do, in class, they will face some challenges, but they don't have to let those challenges take away their dreams, because everything in life is possible. If I was able to do what I was able to do, it means that anyone else can be able to do all over the world. So my message is going to try encourage the student that you can make some changes. You can start. It can be started by one person, and it can grow from there.
Yeah, you will also be meeting with the community at large on Wednesday evening, October 9th, 7 p.m. at the Jim Santee Auditorium. What's the format of that? Will you be giving a little bit of a presentation as you had with the students, and then what, a Q&A?
Yeah, I'll give the presentation and then a Q&A afterwards.
Okay, and then is that message any different, or it just kind of different than what you have told the students?
It would be slightly different because of the formatting, in terms of my messages. It can be applied because of the age difference of the community that I'll be speaking versus the students.
Sure. So, where is home for you now, in the States?
Right now, here in the States, I live in North Carolina, Chapel, North Carolina. But I do go back to Malawi quite often. It turns out a half and half. Half of the year I'm here in the States, half of the year I'm in Malawi.
Yeah. And in terms of what you're working on now, what's that?
Right now, we're trying to build an innovation center in Malawi. The innovation center that is going to allow young people have an idea to come in and work with me to design their own project, because I know that there are so many talented young people, but sometimes their talent don't get to be developed because of lack of resource and also lack of space for them to work. This one of the questions that I always get asked by people. What did I wish I had when I was building the windmill? So my answer is that if I had a space and also have like the mentorship to be able to help me figuring out when I was building the windmill, that would have been very helpful. So I want to give that space to a lot of young people in Malawi who can be able to come and work with me to design a project that will directly solve the problem that they are facing in their own communities.
Okay. Well, hundreds of the Park City community have read your book. And again, you'll be here to talk to the entire community. Again, that's on Wednesday, October 9th, 7 p.m. at Jim Santi Auditorium. William, I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's author William Kamkwamba. KPCW News Time now, 8:59.